So my name is Keegan, and I have sitting across from me today one Mr. Jim Severson. Jim, why don't we go ahead and take the next few seconds and just go ahead and introduce yourself. Tell us what you do and tell us how you got started.
I'm Jim Severson. I'm locally in the restaurant business. Moved down here in 83 and operated EL Crackers restaurant over in Charleston. Since then, we've sold that, but we do. We also have the Alamo Steakhouse in town. We bought that about 93. Kind of a funny story that the Alamo Steakhouse was our main competitor when we got down here, but we did get along with the owners. And one day the owner came up to us and kind of offered to sell us the Alamo because he wanted to get out of the business. So that's how we got into the Alamo, and we've since then closed DL Crackers or sold it, and it's gone through several different owners since then. It's also known as Stu's Nightclub for the younger generation. I guess that's it. I don't know what else would you like me to say?
Well, I think that pretty well takes you through some of the backstory there, Jim. Now, from my understanding is that when you moved down, you were kind of in the restaurant business, correct?
No. My partner and I he had some restaurant management experience. He ran a club, a country club style resort up in northern Wisconsin, but he only had 2 years experience, and he had college education in property management and hotel restaurant management. So that was the only experience we brought down with us. I had a mechanical engineering degree, and so I was kind of handy with my hands. So he kind of did the business end of it, and I did more of the repairs, remodeling, that portion of it. He also ran the restaurant side, and I was graced with operating the nightclub side. And we did that for about 10 years, until about the time that we bought the Alamo Steakhouse. That was kind of our main duties. Also, accounting-wise, we would get together on Sunday nights and do payroll, and we pretty much sat at his desk and just adding up times and calculating taxes and everything else for our employees. Since then, we go with an accounting company to do all that. But at the beginning, we were just kind of putting in a lot of hours to get profitable. That's kind of how we started out.
Now, in terms of putting in those hours and making the shift towards profitability, how long did it take before you actually began to see a profit that was tangible to you?
That's kind of hard to say. I mean, we were bringing in money right away, which seemed like a lot of money to me, but then we had to pay the electric bill was about $3,500 a month. And that was extraordinarily high in my experience. When I was living in an apartment, I was paying $80 a month for electricity. And then all of a sudden it shoots up to $3,500. So at the very beginning, we thought, wow, we got all this money coming in. But then at the end of the month, it's like, wow, we got all this money going out. So it took, I don't know, probably 7 or 8 years to get to a point where I could buy a new car, I guess would be the, it took me, I did buy a new house, or not a new house, but I bought a house after about 3 years being here, 2 years, with a loan and everything else. But, I struggled, I had an old Mustang II that I drove for several years, and then I was driving my partner's diesel pickup truck for several more years before I bought a used car. And it was probably 10 years before I got a new car. So I think that's when I kind of realized that, we're doing okay. We're making some profit, nothing big, but, we paid off some loans. I borrowed money from my parents to get into this business. And luckily, I paid them back right away. And that's probably why I was driving a used car for a length of time, because I wanted to pay them back right away. Since then, you know, about 10 years it took to feel like we had made it and that we could, you know, back off, you know, the 80-hour, 60-hour a week that we put in to make it successful. And part of that, to make it successful, you have to be on the job. You have to be there. You have to see what's going on. You have to know all of the ins and outs of the business before you can hand it over to someone else and trust them to do it.
Knowing the ins and outs of the business, that seems to be very prevalent to the fact of making sure that, like, you're building a line of succession. You're kind of getting to a point where you're not ready to exit just yet, but you're kind of at that point where it's, I'm ready to take the step back and I'm ready to begin that process.
Right. And like with me, with that process, it was handing over the reins of the nightclub manager to someone else. That was huge for me, because I working nights and getting home at 2 a.m, going to bed at 4, and then getting up at 9 a.m. to go back to work was tough.
As a fellow entrepreneur, I can feel that pain with you. That's my day starts at 7:30 and doesn't end till almost 2:30 in the morning.
Yeah,
so it can definitely be rough sometimes. So if you had to think back to it, what initially made you want to become an entrepreneur or own your own business?
You know, I've always, actually, my partner and I, when we were kids, we grew up, I met him in kindergarten, and we were kids, you know, we'd try to come up with not get rich quick schemes, but we'd have toy sales and we'd have comic book sales. And he had a train set, so we set up train shows. We did anything we could to make a little bit of money. So we were pretty much entrepreneurs way back when we were just little kids. And I had an allowance from my parents, but it wasn't much. We both had paper routes. So we did whatever we could to make that extra little bit of money to be able to, with me, it was playing, you know, models, buying models, you know, and building models. And with him, it was buying more trains and track for his train set. So, I mean, it's kind of been ingrained in us all our lives.
And so as you grew up, it was kind of just a natural progression, something that you kind of just fell into.
Yeah, and then when we got older, I mean, he went to college, I went to college. I was working for a contractor up in the Chicago area, and I really just hated it. I was sitting at a desk all day long, and he was kind of in the same situation. He didn't like working for someone else. So in about 1982, 1983, we just said, let's go into the bar business. We can make all kinds of money. And we were pretty naive about that. And when we started looking, we both lived in the Chicago area. We tried to find a corner bar, you know, restaurant bar to get into. And that's when the interest rates were extraordinarily high. They were 14-15% for loans. And there's just no way we could, you know, with very little cash, get a loan to buy a restaurant and a bar. So we were kind of stuck, you know, in the jobs that we were doing. And one of his former employers came across the restaurant down here in Charleston and approached the owner and said, would you be interested in selling it on contract? Because the two buyers really don't have any money. They've got, you know, a little bit of experience, not much. I think we kind of embellished that to the seller. But, you know, we were willing to work and work hard. And that's how we bought the place. We bought it on contract.
So that actually brings up another really good question. What are some of the biggest challenges that you faced as you were trying to get started, whether it was specifically in your first bar or even going so far as to moving into the Alamo?
The biggest challenge was just finding this owner that was willing to sell the company to us on contract. Because if that didn't happen, we never would have gone in business. I think we would have been frustrated and just given up on it. And I'd be some retired engineer now, which probably wouldn't have been a bad life, but I really enjoy working for myself where I don't have to answer to someone else. Well, I take that back. I do have to answer to every customer that has any kind of issue, but I'm okay taking care of, you know, dealing with that problem over some boss that comes in and starts yelling at me for something I didn't do. I really probably have a hard time taking orders from people, you know, and even when my partner needs me to do something, he kind of asks or suggests, but he never demands. And that's kind of how we've gotten along in our business relationship for so long.
Well, that's definitely something to keep in mind. Shifting gears here a little bit, what is some advice that you would give to the next wave of entrepreneurs beginning to find those openings, find their way to make their mark?
Well, the biggest thing is you have to be willing to put in the time. I've seen some people go into business where decide they want to buy a new car rather than spend the time on, you know, working whatever business they have. You know, they think they made it big just because they get the contract, they've got a storefront and a key that they can open up and they can decide whatever they want to do that day. The business owns you, and that's the attitude you have to have for quite a while, is that you don't own the business, it owns you, and you have to really put in the time and the effort. If you're not willing to do that, you shouldn't be an entrepreneur. You know, you're better off with someone telling you what to do and what time to punch the clock and what time to leave.
I guess that is some really good advice. It's really about the attrition, just making sure that, like, every day it just gets a little bit better.
Right.
Not by leaps and bounds, but just a little bit more.
And also, if, you know, if your business is dealing with the public, the old adage, the customer is always right, even though customer is usually wrong, you have to do whatever you can to please them, because if they leave and they're not happy, they're going to let, you know, you got the Facebook world now and the word's going to get out. So you really have to almost, you have to work harder at pleasing those customers to get more business in.
Kind of sticking with that line of thinking there, what are some things that as a business owner that you dislike about owning your own business?
You know, at the beginning, because we put in so much time and effort, we had no free time. The business owned us, couldn't take a vacation. Until you know that you've made it, or you feel like you've made it, you lose some sleep at night thinking, how am I going to pay the bills? How am I going to get by this? You know, going back to because my partner was the restaurant manager and I was the nightclub manager, I dreaded working late nights like that. You know, and then there's other nights where, you know, you might, in a bar business, you may have some scuffles, some fights, you got to call the police in. And that's just kind of a ulcer creating tension there.
It drains you.
Yeah.
Takes a lot out of you
and,
for it.
You know, and so I was very thankful when I handed over the reins to some other manager. But, you know, looking back, there were great nights in there that I really enjoyed, and I'll always remember.
So it's a little bit take the good with the bad that goes along with it. So ultimately, I mean, you're on your second or third restaurant now?
Well, we've got the Alamo is the second restaurant that we opened, and that is it. We're done with the restaurant business. But a little over 20 years ago, we decided to go into the hotel business. And we built a hotel in Kankakee, Illinois, Holiday Inn Express. And since then, we've built three Hampton Inns, and we bought a Fairfield Inn. And we've since sold the Holiday Inn Express. So we're more in the hospitality business than the, I guess, the restaurant business. We don't have a lot of time to operate the Alamo anymore because we spend more time with the hotels. And that's, you know, so we've got a general manager at the Alamo, and we've got a kitchen manager, and we check in on them on a regular basis. We're more of a hands-off style at the Alamo now.
Okay. So it seems like you're getting ready to make that transition again, where you're starting to begin the process of the handoff.
We did that quite a while ago.
Well, I guess what I'm initially asking is, if you were given the opportunity, it seems like the answer is already baked into the question itself, but would you do it again?
Oh,
would
yeah.
you go back and keep going through those long nights?
Yeah. Yeah. It was worth it. I'd do it again. Absolutely. I wouldn't do it any other way. Maybe I'd, and you know, we started when we were 26 years old, so it'd be hard to start earlier than that because we both went to college. So, you know, we were maybe 2 years out of college when we did this. So, I was younger then, so I could deal with that and deal with less sleep. It'd be great if we could have started younger, but I would definitely do it again.
It's good to know that, like, that hard work and I guess no other way to put it, but like the nose to the grindstone really seems to have its own sense of satisfaction for itself. With that feeling of satisfaction, was there a single moment that told you that you had made it, that your business was finally successful? Or was it just like a initial passing feeling that you didn't think about until years later?
Nothing hit us. It was just constant. You know, we work, we get income. You know, how are we doing? We're doing okay. What's your credit rating? You know, back then, I don't know. I don't care. It wasn't as important as it is today with borrowing and with you know, just, I mean, if you got a bad credit rating, your interest rates are higher.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't really even think about that in the past. I think it just kind of gradually came on and realized, yeah, I can afford to do that. I can afford to, you know, buy this. I can, and that's, so there was no, you know, one turning point where I knew I was successful.
It was just a whole bunch of small things that kind of grew.
Yep.
If there was something that you could do differently in your initial startups, is there anything that you would have done differently, or do you feel like you kind of step A to step B to step C followed the lines?
You know, in with respect to me, I'm happy where I'm at and what I've done. But you could look at someone like Jimmy John, the franchise. He started about the same time we did, and he was more of a growth business. He wanted to open up more stores and get as big as he could, as fast as he could. And I think my partner and I were more on the, you know, we were kind of locked into the one restaurant, make it successful. Would I do it differently? Probably not, but I could see where we could have been ultra successful by opening more restaurants, but we could have been failures too. And I guess going back, you know, starting the business, we started young and we really didn't have any responsibilities other than to the business. You know, neither one of us was married. We didn't have kids. And I could see how it would be harder for someone that has a family to do this. My dad always wanted to be an entrepreneur. And when I borrowed the money from him, he pulled me on the side and said, you know, I always wanted to own my own business. But, you know, I had a wife and I had three kids at the time. And I was just locked into this job for the rest of my life. And, you know, that's why when we did go into business, I wanted to make sure we were successful just to please him. I didn't want to fail. But I can understand how if you're, you know, someone older with responsibilities, it's hard to make that jump. And if you can and you make it and you're successful, it's so worth it.
There's just kind of no other feeling to go with it.
Yeah. So I'm pretty happy with how it turned out with me and the smaller growth. And, you know, one restaurant's fine right now.
So sticking with the one restaurant, was there a specific conversation that you and your partner had where you discussed about possibly expanding your restaurants, or was there a moment where you're just like, no, we're just going to stick with the one?
My partner talked me into opening another restaurant in Normal, Illinois, and I wasn't quite ready for it. I think the term was expand your horizons. So about 2 years into the original restaurant that we had, we bought a business in Normal and opened up EL Crackers 2. And it was pretty much a failure from the start. It was there were a lot of barriers to entry in that town at the time. It was hard to get customers. It seemed like you had to put ads in the paper constantly just to get a few people in. And after about a year and a half of failing there, I was lucky to talk the landlords into letting us out of the lease if we would pay them the back rent that we owed them. And we were locked into a long lease, and luckily they let us out of that, and that kind of scarred me for a long time. And I think it put fear into my partner also. And at that point we just put our noses to the grindstone and just made sure that the original restaurant was successful. And the next business wasn't for about 10 years when we bought the Alamo Steakhouse.
If you don't mind me asking, can we talk a little bit about EL Cracker 2?
Sure.
What were some of those barriers to entry that you experienced?
It was hard to when we bought it. We looked at the numbers that it was generating and the amount of customers it was bringing in, and it was kind of the same thing. It was a restaurant, and then after about 9 o'clock at night, it turned into a nightclub. There was a DJ and there's a dance floor that, you know, we'd clear the tables from the restaurant and it would operate as a nightclub. And those numbers were generated. We didn't know that the business was overcrowded past fire limits a lot of the times. And when we went there, the fire marshal was very strict and limited the amount of people to 75 people, customers. And I think before we bought it, there would be 200-300 people in there. And I think there was a cover charge and then the drinks in it. So as soon as we got in there, we were limited on how many people we could have. And so it reduced our income by quite a bit compared to what we based income on when we bought it. As far as the restaurant was concerned, it was hard to get employees. It was a bigger town than Charleston. The payroll was higher. The manager that we put in there, the general manager, wasn't as enthusiastic about the business as we would have been. We didn't have time since we had the two restaurants. We were kind of split. So it took me away from the one in Charleston, where so we had a different nightclub manager there, and that wasn't doing as well as when I was managing it. We didn't have a great management team in Normal, so we were just kind of losing it a little bit. And so you got the fire inspector that's coming in. The health inspectors were just, you know, I think we were new kids on the block. And everyone wanted to kind of impress on us that they were the bosses and they were in charge. I'm loosely saying it, but, you know, in Charleston, it's more the good old boy attitude. And there it was, you're working for us. You're working for the health department. You're working for the fire department now. And it was just really tough to do business in that town.
It seems almost as if, like, the ideology between opening a restaurant in Charleston and having one in Normal shifts as you begin to move further away from where you're located.
Yeah.
Would you say that the distance might have had something to do with that as well? Just being so far away from it?
Yeah, I would go there. I had an apartment there, and I would work 3 days a week there, and then I would come back and work 4 days a week in Charleston. And I was kind of pulled between the two places, so I was less effective because I was at two different places.
almost spreading yourself too thin.
Spread too thin, yeah.
I've got a few more questions on here, Jim. And one of the old adages that you always hear with entrepreneurs is you pay your bills first, you pay your employees next, and then you pay yourself last. Is that something that you stuck to? Did you ever really pay yourself last, or was it one of those things where, you know, you pay yourself when you could and then hope for the best on it?
Always pay yourselves last. And I guess that's how you know if you're going to be successful or not. You have to pay your employees. And then you have to pay the sales taxes, because the city or the state will come in, and if you aren't current with your sales taxes, they'll shut you down, and you have no recourse if you're shut down. There's no way to be able to generate that money to pay your sales taxes, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but that's how they operate. You know, they've got the hammer, and they're going to put it down. So you got to pay your employees first. I'm not going to, you know, they've worked hard to keep my business going, and they're going to be the first ones to get paid. And then it's the state, the sales taxes, and then it's the mortgage or whatever. And then if there's anything left over, I pay myself. If I can't pay myself and it goes long enough, then I know that it's not successful and maybe I should get into some other line of business.
So that seems to be like the line in the sand for you. Take a look at what all your expenses are, what your revenue streams are, and then from there, if you have enough to make what you want to make or need to make to survive, then that's that margin there.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any sort of like advantage that you feel that you have for owning your own business as opposed to if you did not own your own business?
I like working for myself. Yes, I can go in any time of the day and, you know, I can decide to not work today and not show up because I'm not the general manager. I can easily do that where I'm not punching a clock. There's something to be said about not having to punch a clock, to go in on a specific time, 9 to 5 every day. I've been doing this for so long that I think I'd rather work varying hours, 60 hours a week than 40 hours a week, 9 to 5. You haven't asked this question yet, but as far as owning a franchise compared to owning your own business, franchise, you have to answer to the franchisor. They dictate what you do, what you can do, what you can't do. Good thing is, if it's a chain, they're doing that to keep the brand consistent. Where if you go to one restaurant or hotel, it'll be predominantly the same if you go to a different one. And that's the purpose of the franchise, and that's the reason why they dictate what you can and cannot do, what you can serve, what your hours are, which is an advantage to some point, but then there's no creativity, where if you own your own restaurant and it's not a franchise, you can change the menu anytime you want. You can see what the trends are with your customers, and maybe they prefer a certain item where, you got your franchise, like McDonald's. You have to serve exactly what they tell you to serve.
There's no ability to adapt for local flavor, so to speak.
Right. There really isn't. With the hotels, it's the same way. You talk about adapting for local flavors. When we first rolled out the breakfast menus for the hotels, we were required to put out specific items. And I think because of the franchisees complaining to the corporation that the food items weren't going over well in their locale, they finally allowed us to have a local flavor. You know, if you're in the South, maybe you serve, instead of hash browns, you serve grits. Maybe depending on where you are, the local flavor, you can adjust that a little bit. For the most part, you're with a franchise, you're kind of locked into what they tell you to do. And when you have your own business, you're free to do whatever you like.
So that actually kind of leads into another question that I got here real fast. Is there an advantage to opening a franchise as your first business?
we were lucky in not opening a restaurant. We got lucky, I should say. We learned from our mistakes, and we learned quickly. But I think if my suggestion or advice would be, if you can get into a franchise, they will help you set up their, you know, your bookkeeping, your menu will already be, you don't have to worry about coming up with menu items. It'll already be picked out for you. They'll always have a department that you can call for advice, help you succeed. And when you open a franchise, they'll generally be there for the first week or month to help with training, to help with every facet of your business. So even though you may have experience in the restaurant, or, you know, and I'm using my example, as far as a startup, I think you're better off going with a franchise if you can.
Kind of a little more of a lower risk for the entrepreneur.
Right. Plus, there's, you know, if it, depending on what the franchise is, there may be funds in your franchise fees to pay for local advertising and for national advertising. You know, that's one stumbling block when you go into business. Now, with today's age, you can almost do free advertising with you know, Facebook and all the other outlets. And I think the word will get out better and faster than in the past. You know, 20 years ago, it was radio, TV, or billboards, and word of mouth. By doing radio, TV, and the billboards, you don't know how effective it is. You may run an ad and you may not get any business for 3 weeks, and then all of a sudden people will be pouring in. You just don't know. And, you know, how much, you know, I'm paying $1,000 a month for that billboard. Is it really worth it?
There's no metrics of which you can measure the effectiveness.
Right. Now that was in the past. Now today, you know, you can get the likes, you can put it out there and you'll get a feedback of how many people are paying attention to it or how many have seen it.
And it's almost instantaneous
too.
I know for my company itself, I keep track of all those metrics right there on my phone. So at any point during the day, I can pull that out and see, okay, well, we've increased, you know, our subscriber count.
Right.
So I understand the idea of advertisement was such a gamble, especially if you are an entrepreneur and you are opening your own business. I know that we had spoke about franchises and those franchise fees possibly paying for some of that advertisement. But if you're going in at it alone, it was such a gamble for you back then.
Right, right.
That really kind of moves me into my next piece here. Was it really such a huge leap of faith for you when you finally decided that this is what we're going to do?
It was a huge leap of faith for my parents, because they were the ones that when I sat down and told them that we were going to go into business, or we were planning on it, and that I needed $20,000 to get into the business, my dad, who was retired on a government pension, kind of argued with me the first day and said, "Why did you go to college? Why did you get an engineering degree? You know, why are you doing this?" And went to bed that night, and you know, thinking that okay, well, I'm going to have to find someone else to borrow the money from. And the next morning at breakfast, that's when my dad said, "You know, I always wanted to go into business for myself," and he lent me the money. And if I failed, I failed on his pension and his retirement and his, you know, savings. And so there was a lot of pressure that I put on myself to make sure that we were successful, that so I wouldn't fail him and they wouldn't have to change their lifestyle because they lost $20,000. Back then, you know, $20,000 was, you know, that's a couple of years' salary, or a year's salary for them. So
that was definitely a huge investment.
That was a leap of faith. You know, me, I'm young. You know, if I fail, no big deal. I don't care. I've got $5,000 in my name. I'm putting that into the hat. If I fail, I'll just go back as an engineer and get a job somewhere. But for him, he put a lot of trust in me.
I can definitely see that it paid off. Any final words or tidbits of advice that you want to offer other entrepreneurs out here?
Like what we've talked about, if you want to work for yourself, it's one of the greatest things in the world. But you got to put your time in. You got to work hard at it. You can't have distractions. You know, your whole life is to get successful and to a point where you can hand the reins off to someone else that you trust. And at that point, you know, if you want to do a lot of growth, then you're going to be working 90 hours a week, probably for the rest of your life. If you want that, you know, if you want to have your 30 restaurants or 40 hotels, it takes a lot of work. And, you know, the customer is always number one.
Well, Jim, I definitely want to thank you for your time, for being here today. It's been a pleasure sitting across and talking to you. And I wish you the best of luck with everything that you're doing now and everything that you'll do in the future. This is Keegan with Elevated Conversations here at Elevate, and we hope you all have a wonderful day.